to do that on Shabbos and Yontif every single time, with the exception of the Seder, where the person leading the Seder does not wash before a Kiddush. It's a fascinating statement, because what does it indicate? It indicates a lot of things. Obviously, what seems to be indicated here is that the people who participate in the Seder would wash their hands and remain quiet all the way from Kadesh, Orchas, Karpas, Yachitz, Magid, Rachsa, all the way to Motzi Matzah, that nobody would speak from one point to the other. That is interesting on many, many levels. One level is interesting is as follows. There is a machlokes as to whether when you're saying the Haggadah, it's appropriate for everybody to say the Haggadah, or just the person who's leading to say the Haggadah. We'll just do a quick test. How many people at their Seder does everybody read from the Haggadah? Show of hands, because you're all muted. One, two. How many people do only the leader read from the Haggadah? I'm feeling so lonely here. So in fact, it's one of the very few things that if you look at the Gra, you look at the Valatanya, there is an agreement that in fact it is not necessary for everybody to read from the Haggadah. And in fact, it might be inappropriate, according to those opinions, to read from the Haggadah. Why? Because the whole thing doesn't make sense. The Haggadah is set up to a large extent in terms of Shakla V'Tayra. There's questions and answers. Some person asks Manish Tana, and someone else answers Avadim Hayinu. If the same person who's saying Manish Tana is also saying Avadim Hayinu, it doesn't make any sense. Why are you asking yourself questions? So in fact, it seemed clear from the Mordechai that the only person that was speaking was the Baal Haggadah, and the other people would remain quiet, and they would be Yotze with it. There is a discussion of Usher Weiss has as to whether you can say that this is a type of mitzvah where you can say Shomea Ka'ona, that you can just listen to it. But he says, no, it's not necessary. It's more than that. The mitzvah is for there to be Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. What does it mean, Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? So every single day there is a mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. Every day of the year we have to remember, we have to make mention of the fact that we left Egypt. When do we do that? Well, we do that in Kriya Shema. In Kriya Shema we get up and we say every day at the very end, in Vayim Shema, it says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim. We mentioned that I am the Lord that God took you out of Mitzrayim. Right? So we do that every single day, but that's all you have to do. All you do is Zechira, just have a mention of it and your Yotzei the Mitzvah. However, during the time of Pesach, it's much more. During Pesach, there has to be a Sipur, there has to be a discussion about it. What does a discussion mean? So a discussion means that there has to be someone talking and somebody listening. There was an old joke on Saturday Night Live many years ago. So this used to be a problem, you'll remember, that people used to walk around New York talking to themselves. And it scared people, guys walking around talking to them. Nowadays, we have cell phones. People walk around talking to themselves, and it's absolutely normal. But at the time, I remember they got up on Saturday Night Live. They said, no, what are we going to do? We have all these people talking to themselves. They had an idea. We should pair them up. If you have two people talking to themselves, walking together, it looks like they're having a conversation. It won't scare the tourists anymore. It was the big eights that they had at the time. Right? So that's the thing. If two people are just talking, that's not a conversation. That's not Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is one person is telling another person what the story is. And just like it's a mitzvah on the person who's telling the story, that they're involved in Sipur, also the person who's listening is involved in Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim as well. So that's what the Mordechai said, takes it to the far degree that in fact, that only one person has to talk, and because that, everyone else could wash before Kiddush. We don't follow that. I don't know anybody who follows the opinion of the Mordechai that washes before Kiddush here. Everyone else assumes that's an exception for everybody, but it's not an exception in that there are, that if you look at many of the poskim, as I mentioned, of Usher Weiss, the Baal HaTanya, the Gra, they all say that only one person is supposed to be saying the Haggadah, not everybody else has to be reading along. Kiddush is your standard Kiddush. That's followed by Orchatz. Why do we do Orchatz? Again, that's a machokas yekis against the world. Show of hands again. How many people, when they do orchats, everybody at the table washes their hands? How many people, only the person in charge washes their hands? Oh, at least I have a few friends here. Slowly, slowly, I'm getting someplace. Ted, I knew you're always on my side. The reason for the different minhagim is as follows. It has to go with the question of why do we do orchats? The very basic question. The one approach is given is it says in the Gemara that a davar shetibulo b'mashke, if you dip something in a liquid, you have to do netilas yadayim beforehand. And therefore, we're about to dip the karpas in the salt water, and therefore you do it beforehand. If that's the reason you're doing it, then everyone should wash their hands. That is correct. However, many people will dunk a donut in milk, and they don't wash their hands beforehand. In general, we don't wash our hands on davar shetibulo b'mashke. We don't wash our hands before we dip something into a liquid. Why not? Because that has to do with kudshim. It has nothing to do with the modern day halachas. And we generally don't do this. So some people say no, because Pesach is different. Pesach, we're commemorating the Korban Pesach. We're acting as if we're doing it that way. So okay, so if that's the case, everyone should wash their hands. There's a second approach in the Rishonim, and that approach says no, we're only doing it Kadesha Yishru Hatinokos Akatanos. We're doing strange things to keep the kids awake. Listen, Seder's going to start late. I was pointing out that Seder's going to start a little earlier this year. You don't have to wait until we all walk home from shul. So in fact, everyone will probably start their Seder earlier. Less kids at the table, it'll probably go a lot quicker. You know, that there's that'll definitely be different this year than, that'll be definitely one of the manashtanas, why is this year different? Because we'll all be in bed by 10 o'clock. But the idea being that the reason we're doing it is in order for it to look different. So since we're doing it to look different, therefore it's more than enough just for one person to do it. Not everybody has to do it. And in fact, that's how I do it, as does Yitzhak and Ted as well. That is the second approach. Karpas is interesting. Karpas, we dip into salt water. Why do we dip it into salt water? We dip it into salt water because to remember the tears that obviously, definitely the beginning of the Seder progresses, and the Seder, at least is the beginning, is a very sad remembrance. The end of the Seder, we're saying Hallel, we're singing songs, we got out of Mitzrayim, we're all happy, but at the beginning, you know, up until we hit Shulchan Aruch, or at least the hallowed, that things aren't as good. So we dip it into salt water, right? The other part of the Seder, which would seem to be parallel to the Karpas, would be the Morer. Now, one would think Morer, again, so Karpas is Samach Perech, it's somehow reminding of the back-breaking labor, and therefore we dip it into tears. Morer is the bitterness as well. Why don't we dip the bitterness into the salt water as well? Right? Why are we dipping into something that makes it taste actually a little better? Wouldn't it make sense to put the morer in the salt water? So the Maharal has the following interesting idea. He says the morer has something going for it that the karpas doesn't, and that's the matzah. Right? What is the matzah? So he said, the matzah is the idea of the hope. It's very interesting. There is, the story of matzah goes back very, very far away. When's the first time anyone ate matzah on Pesach that we know of? Anyone can buzz in as they wish.
Abraham,
that is correct. When did Abraham eat matzah?
When the Malachim came to him.
When the Malachim came in that same week, who else was eating matzah?
Lot, probably.
Lot, very good. Lot also ate matzah. The Beis HaLevi asks a very interesting question. The Beis HaLevi wants to know, I don't understand. The reason we eat matzah is what? To commemorate that we rushed out of Egypt, that we didn't have time to make bread. Abraham lived and Lot lived. This is 400 years beforehand. Right from the time Yitzhak is born is 400 years, and Yitzhak's not around yet. So why exactly were they eating matzah at that point? It just didn't make any sense. So the Beis HaLevi has a very interesting idea which really sheds light on so much. The Beis HaLevi says, God told Abraham there's a mitzvah to eat matzah at this point. On the 15th of Nisan, you should eat matzah. So he ate matzah. Did he know why he was eating matzah? He had no idea why he was eating matzah. And Lot ate matzah also. And every year from Abraham through Yitzchak through Yaakov, every year they ate matzah. And they didn't know why they ate matzah. Eventually, 400 years later, they saw, on this day, we're going to need to have a mitzvah to get out. There's going to have to be some zechus for us to get out. And then the fact that they've been eating this matzah, that the only reason they ate it was because Hashem told them to. Because they ate that matzah, that was the zechus, that was the merit which allowed them to leave Egypt. So he said, people get confused. He said, people think that because we left Egypt, we eat matzah. No, it's because we eat matzah, the Beis HaLevi says, that's why we left Egypt. And he said, and that becomes clear if you look at, I don't know if people have the Haggadah in front of them, but if you look at the Haggadah, if you look at the four sons, if you look at the question of the Rasha. So we all know there are four sons, the Chacham, the Rasha, Tam Ve'Yidei Rishon. What does the Rasha say? Rasha ba ma'avodo hazos lachem. He says, why are you doing, what is this avoda for you? He doesn't say, and the key is, he doesn't say, why exactly are you bringing a carbon Pesach? Why are you eating the matzahs? But he adds the words lachem. He says, why are you still bringing the carbon Pesach? And that's what bothers us. Lachem v'lo, because you say the word lachem, that's it. Now he's out. So what's he asking? He's saying as follows. He says, you know, I get the carbon Pesach. You're sitting in Egypt. They're worshiping the sheep. You make a statement that I don't believe in your God. And therefore you wipe out, you slaughter the sheep right there in front of their faces. And you're saying, that's it. God's protecting us, not you. Done. And that's why you bring the sacrifice. I get that. He says, but here we are in the year 2000. Nobody is worshiping sheep anymore. Nobody cares. This is silly at this point. You're not making a statement anymore. Maha avodah zos lachem. Why are you still doing it? And that's when we say, lachem v'lo lo, lefi shotze atzmen akal kafar be'ikr. That's kfira. Why is it kfira? He said, because we don't do, there's a problem. He makes an assumption that this is why we do the mitzvah. And according to his understanding of why we're doing the mitzvah, therefore he's got questions. And the answer is just like it was by matzah. We do it because Hashem says so. Eventually we'll understand it. Eventually it'll all make sense to us. But we don't have a right to say that I understand that this is what the mitzvah is, and therefore I think we're not eating pig because of trichinosis. And therefore, no more trichinosis, we can eat pig. I think you can't make a fire on Shabbos because it's a lot of work to rub the things together. But nowadays it's not a lot of work, so we should be allowed to do a fire. In fact, I should be able to drive because that's less work.
Rabbi Rapp?
Yes.
I have a question.
I'm shocked.
I know. So this thing about Avram and the 15th of Nisan, I don't know this. I don't know this. I guess I'm just ignorant. Can you tell me where that is? How we know that?
It says that he gave them in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, Ugos Matzah. He gave them matzahs to the three angels, and Rashi comments that the Pesach Haya. The reason he gave them matzahs is because it was Pesach. That is the source.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Thank you.
No problem. So in fact, the idea of matzah is the hope. Once we have matzah, right? Matzah from the very beginning was what was going to get us out of this. So that's what the Maharal says, that that karpas, that has no redeeming qualities. Therefore, we have it with salt water. The maror comes with matzah, right? Right? The maror comes with motzi matzah, maror korech. It's surrounded by matzah. And since it comes with it, the hope, that's the reason why, you know, we don't do it with salt water. Even though it itself, on the one hand, is obviously, it's harsher. On the other hand, it's easier for us to tolerate, we make it, because it comes with the hope, that is the matzah. We've mentioned yachatz before. Yachatz is the splitting of the matzah. Why do we split one? So it's the matzahs are called lechem oni. Why is it called lechem oni? Because it's she'onin alav dvarim harbe. That's one reason. Because we say the Haggadah with it. Another reason is because ma'oni b'prusa. That if you ever go to buy your matzahs, so for example, if you're looking for a hand, they you can get for cheap shvurim. Right? Some of the matzahs break. But so if I only use my matzah for the Seder plate, the broken ones don't do me any good. I need whole ones. If I'm going to, however, use my matzahs for the, in general, I always eat shmur matzah. So I'll take broken matzahs as well. So if I'll take broken matzahs as well, I'll get them a little cheaper if they're broken, right? That's how it always works. The things that are a little abnormal, right? The things that are imperfect are always cheaper. So the poor people always buy the broken ones. So because of that, we break a matzah to show that this is lechem oni. This is the bread of affliction. This is a poor man's bread. We mentioned previously that is why there are people out there. I don't know many people like this. I don't know, and I've just lost everyone on my screen, but I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. But does anybody out there only have two matzahs? So the Gra only had two matzahs, and the Rambam only had two matzahs. Why did they only have two matzahs? Well, it goes to, why do we have three matzahs? Most people assume we have three matzahs because they told you in elementary school that you need to have three matzahs because of Kohen Levi Yisrael. And why? So that was that's made up by some preschool teacher. That's not true. The reason we have three matzahs is because you need Lecha Mishnah, and you're going to break one. And 2 + 1 = 3. That is the reason why we really have three. Now, when we say that we would that.
So wait a minute. I want to make sure I understood this. The reason we have three is
and one. Yes.
Reason we have three is because we're breaking one.
Correct. And we need two holes.
Got it. So my other question would be, and you kind of alluded to it. If I had. Let's say I had three matzot, but one of them is broken before I even get to Seder. Can I use that?
Nope, you shouldn't, because we believe that one should break the matzah. One should make a statement by breaking it. But that's
okay,
all you
thanks.
Had, right? But there are opinions out there that say that usually we don't count a broken matzah as lechem mishnah. But on this night we do, because of this rule of lechem oni. That since we are by poor people, we rely on a broken one. So according to those opinions, you only need two matzahs. That is the opinion of the Gra. And people who are really follow the Gra straight, that's what they do. Many of the recent poskim have been opposed to the idea of stealing the Afikoman. So Agi, I don't want you stealing the Afikoman from Yossi this year. I think it's just the two of you. Keep an eye on her. Who knows what she'll ask for?
Why are they against the Afikoman?
Because they're against stealing in general. They think that as from chinuch, from education.
I'm going to ask you, Rabbi, am I mechuyev to buy her a present that steals the Afikoman?
Who said that one?
It depends what she wants. You know, this is.
These women. You never know.
It's true. I'm
too much.
It goes. There is a line that's going around the Beis Din these days, and it's saying that when this is all over, the Beis Din has to be prepared for two things. One, there's going to be a lot of gittin if they want to spend all the time together with their spouses. And two is no one's going to want child custody after spending the time with the kids. So, Rabbi, you know,
Rabbi,
we have to work. Yes, Helen.
Feeling afikoman is, this is like the most fun thing to keep the kids awake.
Right. So it's interesting. So Lubavitcher Rebbe was opposed to stealing the afikoman, or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was opposed to it. Other people assume, nah, it's not really stealing. Come on. I think the majority opinion is that we do allow the stealing of the afikoman and the negotiation that happens after that as well. I think this is one of the highlights for many kids. And if this is your tradition, I would not talk against it.
Good.
Magid is, of course, the highlight of the Seder. Magid is the most important part. And the major discussion this year is about the opening lines. We say, Halachma Anna de Chalna Avasan of Eret Be'arad Mitzrayim. This is the Lechem Oni. This is the bread of affliction that we ate in Egypt. Kol Dichven Yesa Ve'echom. Anybody who wants should come and join us. That's illegal. So people have asked me already, and it seems that Rav Shechter has also gotten the question, are we allowed to say it this year? Is it a violation of Dina the Malchus Dina? We're going to get up and say, Kol Dichven Yesa Ve'echom, but we're not allowed to have guests this year. This is against the local law. It's against the Pesach of the Rabbanim. How are we allowed to say Kol Dichven Yesa Ve'echom? It's a very interesting question that they ask. But the truth of the matter is, as good of a question as it is this year, it's a pretty good question on every given year, every year period. Why? Let's be honest here. A is we say it in our dining rooms with our doors closed, right? We already made Kiddush. If we were really serious about inviting people, we probably should have done it earlier. Definitely should have done it before Kiddush. So therefore, Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that Kol Dichven Yesa Ve'echom is not actually an invitation for people to join us, but rather it is an allusion to the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach, as we said, that there could not be any nosar, there couldn't be any leftovers, and therefore a lamb has around, it was I think 2-3 years ago, I took the shear to the shechita of a lamb, and the guys decided they wanted to get together and buy a lamb. They're going to buy a lamb and they have the sheikh do it for them. So the question is, what does a lamb cost and how many pounds of meat do you get out of it? So you get around 30 to 40 pounds of meat out of a lamb. So therefore, it's highly unlikely that any one individual could eat that much lamb. Shlomo might be an exception, but most people can't do it. Right? So what is it? So therefore, by definition, you would have to do with a chabura. Several people would have to get together. And you couldn't have too few people. You had to have enough people that could eat the whole thing. So there wouldn't be nosar. There wouldn't be leftovers. On the other hand, everybody had to get at least a kezias. Right? So you couldn't have too many people. So therefore, since by definition, you needed people, that's where you'd be given an invitation. Kol dichven yesa ve'echom, kol dichven yesa ve'yifsach. I wish you come and have part of the Pesach here. So therefore, this isn't actually talking about Bizman Hazet, this is talking about in the past. That's why afterwards we say, this is what we always used to do. We always used to have Korban Pesach. Now, unfortunately, we're in a situation where we can't anymore, right? Because at this point, Hashta Hacha, now we're here, we can do it. However, Roshana Haba, Barad Yisrael. Next year we hope to be in Eretz Yisrael. Hashda Avdi. Now we're Avadim. Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin. That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik understood it. So in fact, you were never inviting anybody. And since you were never inviting anybody, you do not run into a problem this year with it. People point out all the time that the majority of this is in Aramaic. Until the last words, Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin. So why do you change languages? So what I was always told in elementary school, and maybe other people heard this as well, was because they spoke Aramaic in the street. So if they heard us yell out, next year we're going to be free, that sounds like a revolution. So therefore we switched to Hebrew so the neighbors wouldn't understand. That's one answer. Another answer which they offer is that we say that when we daven, we shouldn't daven in Aramaic, because we've discussed this before, for whatever reason, the angels don't understand Aramaic. Since the angels don't understand Aramaic, we have to do it here. So therefore, the last part, we are praying that next year we should be free men and women in Eretz Yisrael. So that's why we switch over to Hebrew for that. That is the reason for the language change. Don't we say Manishtana? They always talk about, oh yeah, and what do you do if a person, it's only them and their wife? All these theoretical questions. So then one asks the other the question. And what if somebody's all by themselves? You do the whole thing yourself. Unfortunately, this year it's not too theoretical. There's a machlokes as to the order of the Manishtana. We all have the same order. We all do the order that's written in the Haggadah. But the truth of the matter is, if you look at the Rishonim, many of the Rishonim has flipped the first two. They first started off Shebacholos, Anochim Sha'or Yirakos, and then Anochim Chametzu Matzah. Why the opposite order? The answer is because that's the order in the Haggadah. Right? We started, we did Karpas first, and then only afterwards did we move on to Yachatz with the Matzah. So Taka, if the kid has questions, you should go in that specific order. General answer given is that matzah goes first because matzah is a mitzvah d'oraisa. That according to the Torah, we have to eat matzah. It says, al matzah sumarom yohuha. Is it maror also a biblical obligation? So the answer is no. Maror is only a biblical obligation if you're having Karban Pesach. The Karban Pesach has to be eaten with matzah and maror. There's no Korban Pesach, then it's only Midrabanan. It's only rabbinic, as opposed to matzah remains a mitzvah d'oraisa no matter what, whether we're going to have a Korban Pesach this year or not. Some people point out, it's a silly question. We just said halach ma'anya. We just explained halach ma'anya, the alchamu avasana ba'ar de mitzrayim. This is the matzah we ate. So what's the kid asking questions for? You already got that answer. So the standard answer that's given is no. We explained why it was broken. We said this is a purpose, but you know what? You could break a rye bread in half also. Right? The idea that it didn't have time to rise, that's a different question about the matzah, and that's what we answer afterwards. So we begin to answer. We say we explain that Avadim Hayinu Lofar B'Mitzrayim. We explain that, in fact, we know the story. There's a very funny thing going around the internet. I don't know if people saw it yet, but it talks about the next part of the Haggadah. It says Ma'aser Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azari, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarshah, Shoyim Mesubim B'Bnei Brak. That Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azari, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarshah were all sitting together in B'nai Brak. So the thing that going in there says, and then they were all arrested. Because in B'nai Brak, B'nai Brak is locked up right now. So you can't have five rabbanim sitting together in B'nai Brak. Very interesting, they point out that what do these five rabbanim have in common? These five rabbanim had in common that none of them had ancestors who were in Mitzrayim, who were working in Mitzrayim. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva, we know, was, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, actually the both of them were Ben Gerim. They came from converts. So therefore, their Elta Zed was in the Mitzrayim. Now the other three, one was a Kohen, and the other two were Leviim. And the Shevet Levi didn't work either. So because of that, he said, despite all that, they were still interested in this, despite the fact that they weren't doing it at all. Now, interestingly, here you have five of the greatest rabbis to ever live, five of the greatest Talmudic scholars, What did they learn? They spent the whole night discussing this. The Haggadah, the Gemara, no one ever bothers telling us. No, so what was the upshot? So why not? So they point out that it says, Shebo Tamideim Amar Lehem, Rabbi Sayyidi Giyazman Kriyash Rosh Hashachris. It wasn't that they kept on going until the Tamidim came to tell them. What do we learn from that? We see from there that the Talmidim were not there. We see from there that their Talmidim, in fact, were outside. There were no students who were there to appreciate what was being done. And since no students were there, so therefore there was no one to tell us over whatever became of that. It's very important to have students. If there's no students.
I thought they were strategizing.
They were strategizing what? They're going to do a rebellion against the Romans or something crazy like that?
No, that they were strategizing about the Romans, and that's why the students weren't there, and that's why the students came to tell them that it was time for shock.
My father
yes.
would say every year at the Seder that actually what they were doing was they were making the plans for the revolt, and the students came to tell them that the revolt was started, but like you have a password, because they didn't like, we didn't want to be overheard. They said, now is the time for Shachrit, but that really was the password that the revolt has started.
So it's like saying the geese fly low and then they're supposed to say the grass is wet. The problem is, so why did we bother putting that in the Haggadah? What does that have to do with the Haggadah at all?
It's two different stories of freedom.
It's an odd place to put it, don't you think?
No, I think it makes lots of sense.
Well, not really, because again, we go on afterwards, and we keep on talking about what we do about Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is a pretty much at the very end. V'amartem zevach Pesach, v'hi b'chatzi alayla. Then we talk about other things, but in this part of the Haggadah, It's a very odd drash that people say that this has anything to do with that.
Well, I think it does, and I think there's a message there, because as we all know, we didn't win our freedom from Rome.
That
we will win our freedom from Rome just as we left Mitzrayim, and that it just hasn't happened yet.
Well, again, we kind of lost out to Rome, ultimately. The story of Rome did not have a happy ending. And so to Rabbi Kiva, the story of Bar Kokhba did not have a very happy ending. Again, I'm hoping for better than that. So that is the idea we have here. People are familiar with the next line of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he can ben shivim shana. I'm as if I'm 70 years old. So the Gemara says the simple understanding is that he was actually 18 years old, but they made him look older so he would be at high risk for coronavirus. But I saw an interesting thought by the Arizal. The Arizal said that he has a tradition that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Gilgal of Shmuel Hanavi. And Shmuel Hanavi, we know, was 52 when he passed away. So if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is 18 now, so he's as if he's 70, because he had 52 in the first Gilgal, and I was 18 on this one. We read through this, and there's an interesting machlokes. The machlokes says, "Raban tiskos yom tiskos neretz Yisrael kol yemei chayecha." You're supposed to remember the day that you left Egypt, all the days of your lives. Now, we could have done without the word "all." So, therefore, we have two potential drushes: yemei chayecha hayamim. If you just said yemei, it would just be the days. Kol yimei chayecha aleilos, because we say kol, that means also the nights. You mean that at night I also have to say Shema, and I also have to say Mantisku, etc. V'chachom yimei chayecha omazer, kol yimei chayecha havi yimos ha-mashiach. The chachomim say that no, yimei chayecha means om hazer, but kol means even the time of Mashiach. I might think that the Mashiach is going to be such a greater, more miraculous redemption than Mitzrayim, that I can forget about Mitzrayim. And therefore they say, no, even at the time of Mashiach, I'm going to have to do it. Now, a machok is between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim. Who do we follow? What's the general rule? The general rule is we follow the majority. If we follow the majority, that means we say that Yemei Chayecha means Olam Hazeh. Kol Yemei Chayecha Ribos Rehavi Ribos HaMashiach. So does that mean we don't have to say Kriya Shema at night? So the idea being that no, that's not that there's a machokas here, but they're adding on to it. So that is the idea. We then go into Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Interesting gematria. Yossi, I know you like gematrias. They say that let's see, we'll do quick math. HaMakom is how much? Anyone buzz in with the answer goes first?
191, I think.
What? Makom, no HaMakom.
Oh, so then it's 186.
Correct. So they pointed out that HaMakom somehow is a higher level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because if you take the Shem of Hashem, Yud, Hey, and also Vav and Hey, if you square every letter, so Yud squared is 100, Hey squared is 25, Vav squared is 36, Hey squared is 25, you add it up, you get?
186.
186. That Baruch HaMakom, we are grateful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above and beyond. He's a whole different level than we understand. And we saw that in Mitzrayim. We couldn't understand in Mitzrayim what was the purpose, but in hindsight, we understand how we came out as a nation and we got the Torah. That's why when a person is sitting Shiva, we say, HaMakom Yenachem Eschem. That the Makom, this understanding, this higher level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that doesn't make any sense to us now, what's happening. But the HaMakom, the one that's a level above, somehow you should get the understanding that you will be able to have some Nechama. Then we go through the four sons. We point out that there's Chacham and there's Rasha. Chacham and Rasha are not opposites. The opposite of Chacham is Tipesh. The opposite of Rasha is?
Tom.
No, I'd say Tzaddik. Right? The opposite of a Rasha is a Tzaddik. So why is the first kid called a Chacham? He's not called a Tzaddik. So they're very interesting. The Chavetz Chaim has a strange answer. He says because Tzaddikim don't ask questions. So Tzaddikim just accept what they are. Chachamim, they ask questions. So he doesn't say which is better, but that's the way it is. We already spoke about the Rasha. Very interesting. When it comes to Eino Yedei Lishol, it says At Psachlo. What do those words mean? At, you, Psachlo, engage in the discussion. So what does the word at mean literally? When we talk about a masculine you, we say ata, right? Yeah, at feminine. Is feminine. Right. So why does it say at psachlo? So the idea is that if you have a sensitive child, you have to treat the child in a certain sensitive way. And the mothers tend to be more sensitive than the fathers. I think a lot of you know that this is my first semester teaching the women at Stern College for Women, and my wife and children have given me mussar throughout there that I can't treat them the way I treat the boys. Right? The boys, I slap them around a little bit when they deserve it. And they say, no, the girls are going to cry. You can't act that way. It has to be a whole different approach if you're going to be teaching women. So that's the idea. A kid who's so shy that he's not even going to ask. In order to bring them out, you have to treat them in a much nicer way. That's why it specifically suggests that maybe women would be better than this, than the men would be.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Yes.
What the Chacham says, Hashem, Echem, doesn't he?
When he's Lachem. Once again, you're comparing the.
So the Rasha is Lachem, but he says Echem.
Right. So Echem is also. Why would you say that he also took himself out of the cloud? Is that the question?
That's the question.
That is the question. Wow, I never thought of that.
Is the question. I'm sure you did.
What we had said earlier from the Beis Halevi answers that question as well, for starters, that the problem with, according to, if he's telling me that the issue with the Rasha is that he's saying, Mazes Lachem, meaning that I don't know why we're doing it nowadays, that's very different than Eschem. That would be one answer. The other answer they point out is that from the basic question, if you look at the Chacham in general, you see that's not much an issue. Because he says what? He says, Maha Eidus Vachuki Vamishbatim Ashativa Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. He says, Elokeinu, our God. So he's not removing himself from the Klal the way that the other people remove themselves from the Klal. The Russia removes himself from the Klal. But he's keeping himself as part of it. He's just saying that, you know, I want to understand how you got the Torah, but by saying Elokeinu, he's making it clear that he considers himself equally bound as anybody else. So that is the simple answer that's generally offered to that question.
Rabbi Rapp, I once thought the difference between Eschem and Lachem is the Aleph, Tav, Chaf, Mem are the beginning, middle, and end point, meaning the Chacham recognizes all points God's part of his life versus the Rasha, Lachem, he only recognizes what have you done for me lately.
Okay, there's another answer. So we go through that. The majority of the Magid, when I can't go through everything like this because we'll be here way too long, but the majority of the Magid really is beginning from, like, once we have that background, because we go through the idea that we went down. Then we talk about education, right? When we talk about the four sons, why are you talking about the four sons? So we're explaining that we have an obligation, the parents, to give over to the children, right, the story that they'll understand, that they'll be part of this chain of tradition that will keep on going. So therefore, this is all a buildup. And, you know, when you give over the chain of tradition, it's not one size fits all, right? Someone who's a very talented student is taught it differently than somebody who's not as talented, and somebody who's difficult, who's rebellious, is treated differently than somebody who's shy. That's the general idea that we're trying to say here, is that the Torah recognizes that education is not one size fits all. And therefore, you know, you've got to go, you have to know your child. Even categories, they say, are not enough. It says, you know, Chanoch Lanar al pi darko, that every single individual has to be taught on their own. But then the real majority part of the Magid is we start reading what's called Vidoy Maisras. Right? We start off when we say Tseiloman Ma Bikesh Ravan Harami Rasos Liyakov Ravino. We say, okay, here's the historic beginning. It's a very strange place to start, right? If you ask me, where does it begin, the story of Mitzrayim? So I might say Bris Beinu Besarim. Maybe start that you have Avraham who gets this word from God that you're going to go down for 400 years. That's the beginning of the story. Or maybe the actual going down is the beginning of the story. Or maybe it's Yosef, that's the beginning of the story. Or maybe it's the point where Paro says, okay, you know, that's it. Vayakam Melech Chadash, there's a new leader. Right? There's a lot of different places where we can say that's the beginning of the story. Yaakov and Lavan, it's a very, very odd place to say that is the beginning of the story. So I pointed out one time that it says in the Targum Yonasan, this is a little bit of drush, it says that in Targum Yonasan in Parshos Matos says that Lavan and Bilam are actually the same person. And we know that Bilam was one of the original three advisors. When Paro wanted to know what to do, he calls in Bilam, he calls in Eov, he calls in Yisro, and Bilam said, wipe them out. So the idea being is that's where we're starting from. And then we said, then we go through Arami Oved Avi, we say from the beginning that we went down to Mitzrayim Vayogar Shabim Seima'at, and as we do that, we read one pasuk after another, and after each pasuk, we go in each word, we have a drasha. Vayored Mitzrayim, and that means Onus Hapia Dibor. Vayogar Sham, Moram Eshroyo Yor Yaakov Lishtakeya, Mitzrayim El Logor Sham, Shenemar, etc. And this is the major part where we're now going to tell the story just through these few psukim that appear in Parshas Ki Tisa at the very end of the Torah. And through that, we actually tell the story. And once we get through that, then we do Pesach Matzah Maror, we do Hallel, and we're good to go until the end. That we, in fact, and from there, once we've gotten past that, now we turn into the more positive. And we go through the fact that we got out, we do the Dayenus, v'chule, v'chule. And the Haggadah itself is a very positive book, meaning that it starts every time, it's Maskil B'Gnus, as it says. It begins with saying that, you know, we started off as Ovdei Avodah Zarah, we started off with Terach, we ended up in a terrible situation, but Mesayim B'Shvach, it always ends up in a very happy ending. A lot of people said to me that, Rabbi, you know, we're going through a little bit of a tough time now. A few words of chizuk, a few words of giving us a positive shot in the arm would be appropriate at this point. So I was sitting back on the Shabbos and I was thinking, you know, let's find something nice to say. And I failed miserably. I got to tell you that if you looked at the end of last week's Parsha and Parsha's Tzav, so the Parsha ended with Hashem telling Aaron that, okay, we're now going to have the Shivas Yemei Miluim. We're going to have the 7 days where we're going to consecrate the Mishkan. And during there, Moshe is going to bring Karbanos, and your sons will bring Karbanos, etc. And then on the eighth day, on the eighth day of the Miluim, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there'll be this turnover. Moshe will step down. He will stop assembling and unassembling the Mishkan, and then it's going to be permanent, and you're going to take over. And it says the last three psukim say that during these 7 days, Aaron and his sons cannot leave the Mishkan. So interesting things that you've never noticed before. There's a quarantine, right? We said that the Pesach night was quarantine. Now you had another quarantine. So the question is, why? What was God trying to show Aaron and his sons by quarantining them for 7 days? So it's a fascinating machlokes. No one's really sure. The Ramban gives an answer. The Ramban says, among the Rishonim, he's the only real answer, and he says it's because there's a general rule that a Kohen, whenever he's doing the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, he can't leave until the Avodah is done. Right, he can't say, all right, I'm leaving it on the Mizbeach, it'll go well from here. No, it's an Isser. He has to stay until it's all over. And this was a 7-day Avodah, and therefore, for 7 days, they couldn't leave. So the Ramban said there's no real message here, but rather this is just, you know, a halacha. Rav Shimshon Refael Hirsch says that's wrong, because Aaron didn't bring the carbon the whole time he was there. Only his sons did, and Moshe did. He did not, actually. He didn't do anything until the 8th day. So if that was the reason, Aaron could have left. So the other answers have to be there. I saw a terribly scary answer from Rav Sorotzkin in the Aznayim LaTorah. Rav Sorotzkin points out that, in fact, if you look at the Medrash says that these 7 days somehow are parallel to the 7 days prior to the Mabul. What does one have to do with the other? What is the Tanchuma talking about? So Rashi says that at the very end, God gives a 7-day warning. In 7 days, I'm going to bring the Mabul, and that's going to be the end of the world. And Rashi says that God set Shiva for the world prior to it happening. On the 8th day of the Miluim, we know from Parsha Shmini, you have to wait 2 weeks till we read it, 2 of Aaron's sons died. And because it was during the celebration of the Mishkan, Aaron could not participate in any of the Avelos. He was not involved in the burial. He did not sit Shiva. And therefore, Rav Sorotzkin says that these 7 days of sitting in one place, actually Aaron was sitting Shiva for the people that he would not be able to sit Shiva for afterwards. And I read this, and there was a pachad. I have to admit, I was shocked. Because, unfortunately, in New York, I spent a fair amount of the last week making Shiva calls over the phone, over Zoom, for people who have unfortunately lost parents, siblings, one case children, and in some cases they couldn't go to the Levaya. There's no one saying Kaddish at this point because there's no minyan. There is no Avelis. And you have to wonder if this is talking to us. As we're all sitting all alone, as there are people dying, and there is no Avelis. And this is not a happy sight. Unfortunately, I quote from time to time in the shul, Rabbi Matis Blum. Avi Mailer likes to read his svarim. We have them in the library. Rabbi Blum and I grew up on the same block. He's a few years my senior. And he passed away on Shabbos from coronavirus. And I've been taking it hard. He was a wonderful, wonderful person, and it's a terrible loss. And unfortunately, to make things worse, he lost his wife a few years back. I remember making a shiva visit what happened. He, I think, had 10 children. He got remarried to a woman with 7 children. They put 2 houses together. And now she's an almana with 17 children, having lost her second husband. And I don't know what there was, but again, no one's saying Kaddish. I know that much at this point. And it's really scary what's going on. And one has to look at this and say, you know, is that the message that we're getting here from quarantine? However, Rav Hirsch has a different approach. Rav Hirsch says, no, there's other quarantines in the Torah. Rav Hirsch says, 40 years in the desert, Rashi tells us, if you do the actual count of Masos, in the 38 middle years, they only actually moved 19 times. Once every 2 years did they actually go anywhere. The rest of the time, they just sat in their place waiting for the word from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And no, just sat there. They had no place to go, nothing to do. He said, what was the reason for that? He said, because sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to tell us, you think you're making decisions. Let me tell you who's in charge here. When do things happen when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to happen? Not more, not less. And that was the idea also, that the guys, you're going to do the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, Aaron. Note, you'll do the Avoda the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do the Avoda, and the Karbonos will be accepted if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to accept the Karbonos. And that was the message that he was being told. The message that we are being told is that God is in charge. And that is the same message of the quarantine, I believe, that we had in Leil Pesach. That before we were going to leave Mitzrayim, we had to have an understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the person who's going to do the miracles for us. And the end of those quarantines, all three of them were very positive. Pesach Mitzrayim was the great Geula of Mitzrayim. The 40 years of the desert led us to march into Eretz Yisrael. And the quarantine of the Shiva Shemei Meruim was the building Beis HaMikdash. And at this point in history, there's nothing more than we want in those three things. We want the Geula of the Mashiach, we want to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and we want to build the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, the quarantine nowadays will hopefully turn out like all the quarantines did beforehand. They were all difficult. They all had sadness, as we saw for sure in last week's Parsha. And we have a guarantee, and it's an unfortunate guarantee, that before the third base of Middash is going to be built, there's going to be Melchemes Gog Magog. There's going to be blood spilled. People are going to die. Just like before we left Mitzrayim, Makas Choshech, we left Chamushim, a very high percentage passed away beforehand. So therefore, as much as it's almost the Rabbi Akiva at the Beis HaMikdash, after it was destroyed at the Churban, that, you know, we're suffering terrible losses now, you know, and Halavai, in yes, we have people that are sick in Denver, and should get no worse than that. They should all have refuah shleima, and no one else should get sick. We hope and we pray very much so. But we also hope and pray, as we say, that benisin nigalu benisin yasidin higal, that the original redemption came in Nisan, and we hope and we pray and we believe that the other Nisan, that our next great geula, our great next great redemption will happen in Nisan as well. And things are lining up in a way, for better or for worse, that this is a year that we have more reasons than usual to be hopeful. Right? We have the quarantine that comes before the geula, the quarantine that comes before the Beis HaMikdash, the quarantine that comes before going back to Eretz Yisrael. And hopefully we should all be healthy. We should all take care of ourselves, even if the Yom Tov will not be as joyous as previous Yom Tovim. That's what it seems like to now. But there is potential that this will be the most joyous Pesach that we've ever had. And halavai, halavai, we should all hope and pray that this should turn out all for the best. Chag Sameach, and if you haven't sold your chometz, you should do it soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Thank you, Rabbi.
Rabbi. Rabbi. Rabbi. Rabbi.
What's in me? What? Sydney. She'll come.
Sydney Gray?
Lama.